Welcome to Parents' Perspective. 8-year-old Mark was having trouble in class. It seems he was constantly doing something that was distracting to himself or others. He was becoming the second grade's odd man out. Then his teacher had an idea. The class was going to begin a unit on patriotic songs. She remembered that Mark was learning to play the trumpet and asked him whether he would like to learn and play a special piece for the class. Mark was delighted. His performance began a long-term involvement with school music activities, and an extra benefit resulted. With his new notoriety, Mark even began to settle down in class. From a parent's perspective, what benefits can we expect from a child's participation in the performing arts? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. To answer our questions today, we have two experts in the field. Anthony Stark is a noted composer and pianist and a professor of music composition and theory at the College of Notre Dame in Baltimore, Maryland, and at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. We're glad to have you with us, Tony.
It's wonderful to be here.
James Meisenheimer is chairman of the music department at Winston Churchill High School in Maryland and is currently working on a master's degree of fine arts at George Washington University. Thank you for being here, Jim.
Thanks for having me.
Tony, what advantages are there to exposing children to the performing arts?
Because music and playwriting and theater and painting and all of these things are written and visual and spatial activities, I believe that the kids are encouraged to develop and to see things in a whole different way. And certainly the physical activities that are involved are very important to kids. And in the end, what happens is that they end up with an amazing appreciation for the arts as they grow older.
Seems like it's also a way to express themselves so that they can bring out what's in them.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the most wonderful things about music and theater and all of the arts is that the kids learn that it's okay to do that, that this is a good thing to do rather than trying to hold it in, so to speak. And I believe that as the kids grow, it only becomes easier for them to do these kinds of things. And that's why I believe very strongly in being able to participate in some of the music festivals and theater festivals and so on that I teach in the summer times.
I would think also there would be the stimulation that comes from the interactive nature of performing arts.
Oh, absolutely. One of the greatest things that kids learn is working together in social contexts, so that when they're performing chamber music or singing in choirs or working on stage shows and even painting and writing can be team activities. The kids learn to work together, and they learn that they can come up with a joint view of things, and that it's okay to do that. That having their own perspective is just as important as having a joint perspective.
And even getting inspired by each other's work, I think, would be very exciting.
Yeah. That's true too. Just, yes.
Yeah. Jim, how can parents inspire a child's interest in music and theater arts?
Well, I think providing a child with a wide variety of experiences is the most important thing, from symphonic performances to live theater to dance to ballet. I think just as in sports, students and young children are looking for role models, and I think it's very important to give them role models in the arts as well. They get them on TV, they get them in sports, and sometimes maybe they don't really find role models in the arts. I think it would also be important when you're providing these experiences to maybe look for experiences that involve younger performers, not necessarily their age, but, you know, maybe college or high school age performers as well that they could more closely identify with.
One of the things that orchestras are doing now, and especially the big orchestras like the big city orchestras and regional orchestras, are instrument petting zoos.
Huh.
And what happens is that especially the younger performers in the orchestra, will take their instruments to schools, and the kids get a chance to actually try them out. This makes some of the performers a little nervous sometimes, but mostly what happens is that the kids end up with this wonderful appreciation for how the instruments work. And I absolutely agree with you that those kinds of things are very important.
We just this week, in fact, sent our orchestra to the middle schools in our area. Usually what happens at these levels and at the elementary school level is you have a teacher who demonstrates each instrument and tells about each instrument. Well, we decided let's send our band and our orchestra down to these levels, to our middle schools and elementary schools, and so they could see teenagers playing these instruments and enjoying these instruments, and then they could make a decision on which instrument they might be interested in. And they had the opportunity to ask questions to everyone in the orchestra and band as well.
I think that's great. There's an organization here in our neck of the woods in Washington, D.C., called CHIME, CHIME. And that's an acronym for Community Help in Music Education. And one of the things that this outfit does is to try to put together partnerships between orchestras and schools and individual performers and schools and kids and parents who are in the arts business and the schools, and to get these folks involved at the elementary level and middle school level. And the phone number is here in Washington, D.C. The area code is 202, and the number is 232-8764. And there is an email address. The email address is dmarshak, and that's D, M as in Mike, A-R-S-C-H-A-K, at Juno, J-U-N as in nobody, O.com. And the person to talk to would be Dorothy Marshak, who is the president of the organization. And it is CHIME, and it's Community Help in Music Education. And there are performing arts high schools and so on, but I believe that oftentimes what happens is that the younger kids get left out. And this is something that needs to be fixed, and these kinds of nonprofits like this can help out in that way, in the same way that sending a high school performing group down to middle schools and elementary schools can accomplish the same kind of thing.
All the schools, I think, in most communities have shows, performances. They may have orchestral or band concerts or musical performances, plays, and so forth. Taking children to see those is very inexpensive, but it's a wonderful opportunity for them to see what young people can do. I know a little girl, she's not a little girl anymore, she's a high school student, Jim, who came to lots of shows that you were involved with at your school. And year after year, she kept saying she can't wait till she gets to the high school so she can be in those shows. She got to the high school and she's a techie. She started right out in behind the scenes and loves it. And she didn't know too much about that until she got there.
The common factor between most of my students when I ask them why they are singing or dancing or in theater is they looked up to someone. That seems to run across the board.
Isn't that interesting?
I think that's wonderful. And also another one of the things is that not everybody has to be a performer. Not mm-hmm. everybody has to be on the stage. There are a large number of musicians, and especially kid musicians, that have come through my studio who are a little bit shy about performing and would just as soon not be on the stage all the time. They don't need the spotlight, but they still need to do the music or need to do the theater or the painting or whatever it turns out to be. And these kinds of behind-the-scenes experiences, I think, are wonderful for those kids.
Tony, how can parents tell when a child is ready for music lessons, and how do you get them started?
Oh, I think that there's no question that a kid will let you know somehow. Virtually every experience I've had with beginning students, the kid's interest was signaled by the child fooling around with instruments. If you have a piano in the house, you know, the kid is going to go over and start fooling around with the piano. Or a lot of times they'll respond to records and the radio, and you see them paying attention. When there's music playing, they'll suddenly perk up and pay attention. And I know that one of the things that happens is that imitation begins to take place. You might have seen times when kids will pick out the tunes on the piano or on the organ or on the guitar, if there's a guitar handy, the tunes that they're hearing, they'll find them. And that's the beginning of what we in the business call ear training. And it's one of the most signaling experiences or signaling activities, I think. And in terms of how do you do it, there are lots of music teacher organizations in virtually every county in the country. There's the Music Educators National Conference, and there's the Music Teachers National Association. And those organizations are online. You can find them on the net, and there are local coordinators. And I believe that the single most important thing is getting to know the teacher before the student starts studying. In other words, have some idea of what kind of a person this is, because not everybody is really good at teaching kids and being able to allow them to blossom. Some teachers like to have, you know, sort of do things their own way, and I think that that's a mistake. I think that a lot of times the kids will show you what they need, and you have to watch for that.
How can a parent know the way that a teacher works?
I think by having simple conversations. One of the best things that happened was the time that you, Sandy, and I talked when I was getting ready to work with your family. And there was an immediate rapport, not only with the student involved, but with you and me. And I think that it's those kinds of interactions first that will point the way. Another kind of person, another kind of relationship might not have worked so well.
I don't think that you should be afraid to change teachers once you've started. You might want to make a contract with the child to try this teacher for a certain amount of lessons so that the child can get acquainted with that teacher and that teacher's method. But no way should you feel that you need to stay with that teacher. There are plenty of good teachers out there, and you have to find the one that's right for you.
Do you guys think it's a good idea to take the child to a sort of pre-interview with a teacher and have the teacher talk to the child and the child talk to the teacher a little bit?
Definitely.
I agree.
Okay.
Absolutely agree.
Okay. Tony, could you give some pointers for parents about the discipline required in music study?
That's a tough one. I think that, once again, it seems to me that children will sort of let us know what's working and what isn't working. It seems to me, for example, that 2 15-minute practice sessions in a day, where in each of the 2 15-minute practice sessions, we have concentration going on, are better than 1 half-hour session that the kid doesn't want to do. I think even 10 minutes of work that's concentrated and is productive is better than requiring a half-an-hour practice session or a 45-minute practice session. I agree with Jim that the contract with the child is what works. And the child will in part tell us what will work best for him or her. I do believe that music being a skill and a hefty skill, meaning it requires lots of different kinds of things, it being a written language and physical activity and so on, I believe that some kind of work almost every day is necessary in order for anything wonderful to happen. And I think that even if it's only, like I said, the 10 minutes, I think that that's better than not doing the 10 minutes.
What about readiness, though, if you have a real young child? I have a nephew who's now 7. He's been listening to classical music since he was 3, very attentively. He sits at the piano and he looks like he's really a concert pianist. But I don't think he's ready for the regimentation of having to do something every day. I think at some point he's going to be quite a musical person, but having responsibilities with his music might put a big damper on it for him at this age.
But if he's already experimenting at the piano and paying attention to what he hears and is interacting with music around him, that strikes me as being a readiness signal. And maybe what can happen is some kind of directedness to that activity. It doesn't have to be private lessons. It can be sitting down and listening to different kinds of things for a period of time each day. Or it can even be not practicing so much maybe as learning how to read music, something of that nature. I would take advantage of the interest which seems to be expressing itself.
It's very important that the parents model the discipline also, and it's not always easy. You need to provide the child with a quiet place to practice and a regular practice time, which is not always convenient for the family or the parent. And you need to be near and constantly praising that those children when they are practicing so that they feel that sense of achievement and they want to practice. Now, it's not always going to be easy, and I've never known a student who always looked forward to practicing every day. Some of the finest pianists I've ever heard, I've talked to about practicing and when they were growing up, and they snuck in to the kitchen or wherever and turned the timer down 15 minutes so they wouldn't have to practice as long and snuck back to the piano.
Oh, that's so funny.
And so, you know, you're going to go through those rough times, but if the parent is constantly there modeling, you know, good things will happen.
Among pianists, there's a famous book by one of the great ones from the 50s and into the 60s, a pianist named Gary Graffman. And Gary Graffman wrote a book called I Really Should Be Practicing.
Oh.
And it's about all the things that he sometimes doesn't do when he or does do when he should be practicing.
Are there preferences among instruments in terms of what a child should start with?
That's an interesting question. I know that one of the things that happens is that kids will latch on to what's around them, what's available. And that even includes things like pots and pans and so on. You know,
it's very important that the children have the motor skills necessary for whatever it is they're trying. So obviously at age, you know, 8, they may be able to start singing, but they're not going to be able to start playing a tuba or a trumpet or something. Mm-hmm. And that's why most of these instruments aren't started until the later years of in elementary school. So I think it depends on what they're physically able to do as well.
One of my children wanted to play the saxophone when he was in elementary school, my middle son, and the band teacher in a very kind way suggested the trombone for this child who could not possibly do fingering.
Yeah.
And he liked the trombone because he could play Hail to the Redskins on the trombone.
Very good. Yeah, even spaces between fingers can turn into a problem on an instrument like the saxophone. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah.
Jim, when and why is it a good idea to become part of a group?
Well, we are put into groups at all ages in our society. We're placed into groups. And I can even remember in elementary school being in a reading group. The idea of the reading group was you wanted to read better than everyone else in the group. It was a very competitive situation. I think in sports and in music, they're very closely related. The idea is teamwork, and it's working together as a group. And I think that the values in teamwork are just incredible, working together on problem solving and goal setting and the self-esteem that comes from your group achieving, whether it's a choral group or an instrumental group or a dance company. There's just tremendous value in that.
I'm going to be on thin ice here. One of the things that I advocate against, so to speak, in music is the idea of competitions. I believe that competitions are not the best way for kids to be making music. It's one thing for a child to be praised and to be working at home, but what bothers me is the idea that one kid is encouraged to think of him or herself as being better than everybody else. And I regret that that happens, and I believe that it's necessary for the participants and their families to be very aware of what music competitions can turn into. It's not like a sports competition where there's a whole lot of fun involved. I think that music competitions can be problematic. I've seen some kids who when they didn't come out on top, were really, really felt horrible, and it affected their sense of themselves and whether or not they enjoyed doing the music at all.
And you probably need to specify, I assume you're talking about solo competitions.
Yes, yes, right.
Because some of the group competitions we've done have just been incredibly beneficial.
That's true. Yes, right. I should have made that clear.
And you're working as a team.
Yeah.
what's interesting about teamwork is I even found with a couple of my guys who were not real social when they got into a group that was doing tech stuff. That was a team. It was sort of like a political campaign. They had a lot of stuff to do, and they had a deadline, and they were going to do it, and they were all part of a group. And so even that piece, even though that wasn't maybe as creative as some of the other stuff, was really good.
Well, and even even those kinds of activities help the kids with coming to grips with technology. I mean, when you're working around with tape recorders and video recorders and computers, as those things apply to music and theater, that's stuff that can be applied to the desk too later on.
Jim, in addition to playing a musical instrument, what are some other aspects of theater arts that children could participate in?
Well, of course, there's dancing and singing and acting. I had an interesting experience this summer working at an arts camp where they trained kids in the circus, and I never really realized how much of a performance art that being in the circus was. I've also seen how gymnastics lately has grown closer and closer to a performing art, and how they're including theatrics and et cetera in their competitions. I also run the stage crew program at our school. And those students who help the performers on stage, we look at it as more than just a job. We're there to serve a playwright and to serve the art and help the performers convey that emotion to the audience so they feel just as much a part of those performances as any of the performers on stage. And I've had crossover where stage crew members have auditioned for and been accepted into roles in plays and musicals, and vice versa, where actors have seen the work of the stage crew and decided to try their hand in that.
You've also required that, as I understand it. You want the on-stage people to do some off-stage work.
We require all of our performers to see what goes on backstage.
Well, you can think of set design and the manual dexterity necessary to do the building of it.
Yeah, just all the shop experiences and shop skills. One of the best things for just straight-ahead musicians is getting involved in theater work, because that can turn into a real, later on, it can turn into a real professional association, so that someone who gets experience writing music for high school and junior high can turn that into a wonderful skill for getting through college. I wrote a whole lot of music for the theater when I was an undergraduate, and it was a wonderful way to learn composition and to learn about the theater. And I still love doing that. I still love writing for theater.
We'd like to thank our guests, Tony Stark and Jim Meisenheimer, for your insights and suggestions. It's been very lively and engaging, and I know all the parents listening are going to have a lot of stuff they can use to help their own children with their musical and performing arts education. We hope you'll join us when we continue this discussion on our next show. Our gift to caller number 3 for our listeners' poll will be party supplies for a child's birthday party. Everything you need except the food. To answer today's question coming up next, please call us at 1-800-791-8573 and give us your response. What musical or theatrical experience has your family enjoyed most?
We'd like to send you decorations and supplies for a child's birthday party. If you have other comments, questions, or suggestions for parents' perspective, call us at 1-800-791-8573 or email us at parentspur@aol.com or contact us care of this station. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.